Okay, so we have here Jeff Bird, who's a cognitive neuroscientist and a lecturer at Birkbeck College in the University of London. Now, Jeff, you really caused a storm back there in that session. Very provocative stuff, and also sort of, just very, very sort of meaty. Lots of information there. Lots of food for thought. One of the things that really struck me was this whole sort of issue of goal setting. It's always been seemed it's been deemed to be very central to coaching for some time. We've also had a lot of opponents, particularly of late, who sort of seem to think that, we don't have to have goal setting at all. But you seem to have sort of put that to rest, really, given what you said in the session. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, the goal setting piece?
Yeah, sure. So this is a really, really kind of brand new discovery, really, in neuroscience. So people have long been interested in how humans learn. And as a way of finding this out, we've looked at animals. So we've looked at rats, we've looked at monkeys. And humans, to some degree, learn in exactly the same way as any other animal. We have these very evolutionary ancient mechanisms which enable us to learn through just trial and error, lots and lots and lots of repetitions. And that's obviously a really, really important part of learning. We need to have that system. But there's also another system which relies on very evolutionary new parts of the brain. And potentially, it's only humans that have these areas in the brain. It's the very front of your brain. It's certainly the case that they're much more developed, these areas in humans, than compared to even chimpanzees. And it seems that these areas of the brain are responsible for goal-directed learning. So what's interesting about goal-directed learning is, one, it relies on this new system in the brain, but two, it seems to prompt the release of the chemical dopamine, which is a neurotransmitter, which we know is very involved in learning. So it seems to be that engaging in goal-directed learning makes your brain release dopamine, which increases the degree to which you can learn even after the learning period has passed.
Okay, fantastic. So, I mean, I was talking to Anne sort of just earlier as well. So, and she was saying that I was asking her when do you need to do this goal setting? Is it going to be sort of every session? And she just said all the time. So, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, how often do we have to sort of try and get our clients to set goals?
I think goals are great things. So yes, I would probably agree with Anne. I don't think it's exclusively the thing you should do. So I do think that setting a goal each time you have a session, for instance, might be very useful. We shouldn't ignore the fact that we also need to engage in this evolutionary ancient process, this kind of lots of repetition. So it seems to be that goal-directed learning can produce really amazing changes in the kind of the way that information is routed around the brain. Something we don't actually understand at all yet. We know it happens, we've got no idea how it does happen. But these changes tend to be transient. So this is why it's a good idea to set goals to encourage learning and then to repeat the information or repeat the desired behaviors or desired thoughts again and again and again to make sure it becomes really hard-coded.
Right. There's no sort of easy way, really, is there? Practice, practice, practice.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's really interesting. And one of the things that also struck me was this whole piece around, because obviously in sort of neuro-linguistic program, we talk a lot about mirroring and all this sort of stuff. But you were saying it's really important not to sit directly opposite your client. Now, I've always thought, oh, fantastic, I'll sit opposite, get the eye contact, make sure we're really connected. But obviously not, according to what you say. Can you say a bit more about that?
Well, I wouldn't say, I mean, eye contact is very important. There's no doubt about that. So we've known for a long time that when you make eye contact, that people are encouraged to speak. It's a good cue to make people speak to you is to look at them in the eye. We also know that if you do it too much, it causes anxiety. It's a terrible thing to do. And interestingly, the brain treats eye contact in exactly the same way as it treats something like cocaine. So cocaine activates these parts of the brain, ventral striatum, which is involved in reward processing and making you feel good. And it's exactly these parts of the brain that are activated by eye contact. So it's a rewarding thing, it encourages speech, it's very good. Something I think is quite interesting though, something that Sigmund Freud used to talk about, who actually in his early career was a neuroscientist. And Sigmund Freud argued that we should never make eye contact with a client. And he argued that this was because if somebody's talking about something which they find embarrassing or they think they might be judged about it, they can't help using some part of their mind, some part of their brain, in monitoring the person who they're speaking to for a reaction. Are they disgusted? Do they think less of me? Can I go on? Those kind of things. So it's good to be able to make eye contact. I think that's absolutely, I really wouldn't want to say you should never make eye contact. That's definitely not what I was saying. But two things I think are important. One is that you're not just staring the whole time. I mean, obviously, hopefully nobody would do that. The eye contact has to be appropriate. But two, I think it's worth bearing in mind that there may be times when certain conversations may be easier without the kind of face-to-face eye contact.
That's very interesting. Very interesting. So the other thing, I mean, you just mentioned cocaine, so it's got me thinking about one of the most provocative pieces of your presentation, which is around drugs and sort of the increased use of cognitive enhancing pills. And also you suggested, I don't know how jokingly, but it was very interesting, that, you know, perhaps we could have a sort of sniff of oxytocin before we do our coaching, just to sort of get the bonding working. So tell me some more about that. Should we be slipping drugs into people's tea, or what's the score here? And that's not, well, pun intended, I guess. What's
It's interesting. So there are lots of drugs that have beneficial effects on us. So whether they are kind of intellectual effects, so it increases the degree to which we can pay attention, increases our decision-making ability. Other drugs enhance trust. So oxytocin is the classic example. I genuinely do think that these drugs are probably going to be used more widely. So it's already the case, these cognitive enhancing drugs, that something like 1 in 5, 1 in 20, between those kind of extremes, American students are using these cognitive enhancing drugs. So Ritalin is the most well-known one, methylphenidate. So these drugs are a big issue, and they will be a big issue among leaders who like to push the envelope, like to gain every competitive advantage. In terms of oxytocin, it seems to me, in my very fledgling coaching career, that building and maintaining trust is a very, you know, big part of coaching, and the greater the degree of trust, often the more successful the coaching session will go. Lots of people say that oxytocin enhances trust, and I think in there's lots of research that it does. It's not so clear that it enhances empathy, for instance. So whether we should be slipping it in their tea or not, I don't know. But offering them a chance to have a sniff and having a sniff ourselves may well make the coaching session worth it.
Okay, you heard it here first. I was just wondering if you had a last message for coaches who are interested in this growing field of neuroscience.
Yes, I do have a message, actually, and it's kind of a personal message. So I think neuroscience is absolutely amazing. The human brain is a stunning, stunning thing, and we're making so much progress. About 6 to 8 times a year, I know something that nobody else in the world knows, and there's lots of people like me making this kind of progress. Unfortunately, the kind of buzz around neuroscience at the moment has led to a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon, as it were. There's lots of people giving neuroscience talks, writing neuroscience books, and I think there's a real need for quality control. I think people should be skeptical. If somebody tells you something motivated by apparently something that the brain does, and it doesn't fit with your experiences as a coach, or, you know, you've tried these methods and they don't work, then take everything with a pinch of salt, I think, is my message.
Okay, that's brilliant. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Absolute pleasure.
All right. Bye-bye then. Bye-bye. Bye.